All right. Hello, church. Today, our study is out of Luke 12, 32 to 34. It's when I started reading it, you know, when I first read it the first couple of times through, I didn't really know like how much I was going to get from it. But as time went on and I sat with it and I read it and all that kind of stuff like that, I started to see that there was a good amount to this. So we'll read in its completion and go back and kind of cut it up here. So starting at verse 32, it says, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor, and provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. 34, for where your treasure is, there your heart will also be." Right out the gate, right from the very beginning, we have the phrase, "Do not be afraid." Now, I did some studying on this. And, you know, there's a lot of people that will say that it says 365 times in the Bible with different variations, be not afraid, do not be afraid. When I went to research it and I went to look it up, I couldn't either, you know, confirm or deny it. You know, obviously not all of them say do not be afraid. There's a variation of these things. But from what I've heard in, you know, 365. So every day, you know, if you're feeling afraid, if you feel fearful, something that I do is, well, I'm going to use my do not be afraid for the day. You know, I'm going to go ahead and use that. And, you know, a lot of the times, whatever it is that I was fearful of or whatever it is that I was, you know, thinking about just kind of melts away. And it's really nice like that. So if, you know, just a small thing, you know, because of course, when we get weighed down by the world, when we get weighed down by the things around us, to cleanse that by using the Bible, to let the, you know, let God's word wash over you, kind of remove all of the, you know, whatever it is that you were going through. This is one of the ways that I do that. So that's just something that if you're feeling afraid, you know, or something's bothering you, or, you know, again, just think about it. I'm going to use one of my do not be afraids for today. It does help. Now this next part here where he refers to us as little flock is right. As we get closer to the end, it becomes, you know, it really becomes more and more prevalent just how narrow that door is. Because it's not just, you know, sinners and all those people that don't, you know, they don't want to be forgiven. They don't want to be on the Lord's side. You know, they want to be rebellious and they enjoy their rebellion and all that kind of stuff like that. It's not just that. It's people that literally claim that they are Christians, you know, and then, but they don't read, they just, you know, they're there for, see, I call those people churchgoers. And unfortunately, you know, the large majority of people, you know, who call themselves Christian are actually just churchgoers. And that's kind of, you know, that's why Paul said that we need to always examine whether we're in the faith or not. Because, you know, you should constantly be, you know, making sure you don't, you know, this is a lot of things in life you're going to get wrong. This is one of those things you do not want to get wrong. You don't want to get that wrong at all. You know, and so the next part here is, you know, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. It's pretty incredible, right? If you think about it, and it's kind of, you know, kind of like what Stephen was saying a couple of weeks back, where, you know, even your your parents, even us as parents who are evil, you know, we'll give our children good gifts and good things. You know, we're not going to give him, and he's hungry, we want some bread. We're not going to give him a rock, right? What I really like about this part here is that, you know, God delights in doing things for us, you know, just to see us smile. The same thing is we as parents will do things just so that we can, you know, you go to the store, you get a little, you know, a little chocolate bar or whatever else it is, and you bring it home, and you were literally only doing that because you want to see your children smile, because you want to make them happy. Well, the Lord does the same thing. You know, he's given us way more than a chocolate bar. You know, he's given us an amazing eternity of being able to just walk amongst him. You know, aren't you grateful for that? You know? So we'll move on to the next part here. It says, sell your possessions, give it to the poor. Provide purses for yourself that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. Okay. What I really feel like the really big part of this is you can't take anything with you. You know, you're not able to take any of this, anything that you accrue in this life. You can't bring it to heaven with you. And would you really want to, considering, you know, how much more amazing heaven itself is actually going to be? In Luke 16 and 9, I'll give you a moment to turn to that. Jesus says, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. You know, when we see somebody in need, we do the best that we can to help them. Now, this is not always just about money. You know, it's not, it's about, you know, you can give somebody your time. You can give somebody, you know, you can help them. You can make things for them. You know, there's things that we can do for each other, you know, just because we see each other in need, you know. So when we see somebody in need, especially if it's a brother or a sister in Christ, we definitely try to do the best that we can to help them out. You know, again, it's not all about money and all that kind of stuff like that. It kind of reminds me of the, you know, the rich young man, you know, where he went up to Jesus and he said to Jesus, yeah, what do I have to do to get into heaven? And, you know, he asked him and he starts rattling it off and he's like, well, yeah, I've got all that. I've never killed anybody and I've never done this and I've never done that. So I should be good. Well, sell your possessions and follow me. Well, that's, you know, we talk about a guarantee at that point, you know? And of course, because he was rich, he just wouldn't do it. And of course we don't know what really happened. We don't know where he is, but you know, you think about it, the other Bible passage where it says, you know, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get to heaven, you know? So how much do you really want to accrue? Because again, in order to really get to, let's say, the upper echelons of money, right, where there's, you know, you have more money than you can ever spend in an entire lifetime, you're going to have to do some stuff to get there. You know, you're going to have to, you know, like, I think the least of those things would be like rip off and steal and lie and do stuff like that. You know, all of these things, you don't really want it. You don't, I know I don't want to be a part of any of that. If it means, you know, you don't want, basically the idea of, you don't want to sell your soul. You know, you don't want to start doing horrible things for some cash. You know, and at the last part here, it speaks about, you know, treasure in heaven that will never fail. You know, no thief comes near, no moth destroys. You know, I mean, we think about earthly treasures, and we just imagine a heavenly treasure, what that could possibly be, how amazing that could be. You know, we're talking about the streets of gold and gems and all this other stuff like that. What could a treasure actually be? What more, and honestly, what more treasure could there be than to walk with your creator? To walk with the only good thing in the whole, you know, universe. And at that point, though, you know, things will be changed and we'll definitely experience an entirely new and awesome life that I know that we're all really, really looking forward to. But we still have to live here. We still have to live now. We still have to, you know, try to be that salt, try to be that light in the world. But, you know, again, it's incredible to even think about the fact of what he has in store for us. Is almost like it almost breaks your brain when you think about it, because you're like, what could it possibly be? You know what I mean? You know, later on here, and actually before I do that, before I get to there, something else I, you know, to talk about is, you know, we're told to pray for our enemies and stuff like that. And it's just, this may be a little bit off topic, but I want to share the prayer that I like to, pray for people, even for enemies and things like that. I pray for them the very best blessing possible. And obvious, you know, in an obvious sense, the very best blessing that any of us can and have received is that we turned our lives over to him. What a blessing that is. What a blessing having hope is. What a blessing knowing where you're going when you die. That's a blessing. So when I pray, you know, I you know, bless them, you know, especially you know, in traffic or driving around and somebody decides that they're going to, you know, just cut right out in front of you or whatever other myriad of silly things that people will do, you know, you know, because of course my first response, I'm sure all of our first response isn't, you know, whoa, bless you. You know, it usually starts in a more worldly fashion and then moves to, well, you know, you're not supposed to do that. You know, you're supposed to be blessing them. So for me, when I pray for my enemies or pray for somebody who don't cut me off in traffic or anything else like that, you know, I don't pray for blessings for worldly stuff. I pray that they'll receive the blessing of, you know, turning their life over. Finally here, verse 34, it says, you know, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, this is mirrored in Matthew 6:21, where Jesus says, I believe almost word for word, the exact same thing. And I didn't look this up, but I assume that it said several more times in other places. To me, this reminds me of the idea that we should always focus our attention vertically. And it's very easy to get distracted. It's very easy to get distracted on the horizontal. What's going on around you? What you're seeing, what you're reading on the news, what you're seeing on your news feed, what you saw on Facebook, you know? Because, you know, we live in wild times. We live in times where, I mean, just the things that are coming out are, it's easy to focus on those things. But the Lord calls us to focus on him and to focus on the next life. This is not our home. We're just travelers, sojourners, if you will, through this dark world. But once we are done here, we'll move on to our, you know, our best life, if you will, with him. Just being able to just walk amongst him as he, you know, from the Garden of Eden, that's all he ever wanted. you know? And so we'll get there, but we have to live in this world first. So I get it. It's very difficult to focus on the vertical, you know, keep your eye on the Lord and to live your life through a biblical lens when every time, especially with the phones, so you turn that phone on, the first thing you're going to see, like I said, it's going to be, you know, just evil immediately. And it's difficult, but I would use this as a call for us to remember to try to just focus on the fact that we are, you know, this is not home. None of us are home. We're just on our way to where, you know, the best place possible, which is by the Lord's side. I thank y'all for listening. I pray for travel mercies for you, for everybody who's coming home. And we'll see you next Sunday.